These past few weeks, we've been talking about various aspects of our faith and our trust in God. We talked about the dark valleys of life and how that God will lead us through those dark valleys. We talked about the storms of life and how God is with us in the storms. All of those are concepts in the scriptures that we find strength in and concepts that we find comfort in. They're passages that bring comfort to our hearts. Well, what would your answer be this morning if we went around the room and I asked everyone to name the most comforting passage in the Bible? No doubt there would be many that would name the 23rd Psalm, the great shepherd psalm of David, where he talks about God caring for us as a shepherd would care for his sheep. Some might mention the chapter in Luke where Jesus reached forth his hand and said, "Peace be still," and Jesus calmed the tempest. We talked about that last Lord's Day. Others would no doubt mention Romans chapter 8, where Paul wrote, "All things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are the called according to His purpose." And then no doubt there would be many that would select John chapter 14. And yet when selecting John chapter 14, most everyone would choose the first four verses where Jesus said, "Let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions, and if it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you might be also." Because when we read those passages, and we think about Jesus going back to the Father and preparing a home for us, those verses bring comfort to us when we've lost loved ones. They've been selected many, many times as the final words said over someone in the setting of a funeral or a memorial service. This morning, I want us to look at John chapter 14, but I want us to focus primarily on the very first verse and only the very first verse. Because John chapter 14 and verse 1 is where Jesus gives us the cure for a troubled heart. Because Jesus tells His disciples, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." There it is. The cure for a troubled heart. The cure for trouble is faith in God and in His Son, Jesus Christ. Have you ever had one of those days when it just seems like everything goes wrong? One of those days where no matter how hard you try, everything you do seems to just backfire. One of those days when the harder you try, the worse it gets. Every one of us has had one of those days. Some of us have had more than one of those days in our lives. I want to share a story that I think illustrates that principle quite well. It seems there was a lady one day who was in a rather large airport. And we've all read and heard horror stories of airports, and some of us have even experienced them. And this lady in this large airport had a layover for a connecting flight. And so she stopped in the gift shop at the airport, and she bought a very overpriced Kit Kat candy bar for a snack. The waiting area is very, very crowded, but she spotted an empty seat at the end of one of the rows. So she rushed down there to get that seat and leaned her hang-up bag against the seat. And then she took her purse and she took several small items and set them on the table next to her, next to her seat. Did I mention there's a rather large man sitting in the seat on the other side of the table? Remember that. It's important. She took a moment. She straightened up her hang-up bag, and everything is finally in order, and she's ready to sit down, relax for a few minutes, wait for her connecting flight, and eat her Kit Kat candy bar. Well, to her surprise, she sits down and reaches for her Kit Kat candy bar, and the rather large man in the seat next to her has unwrapped her Kit Kat candy bar. And she watches in utter amazement as he breaks off a piece and ate it. And she thought, well, my goodness, I've never seen such gall. I have never seen anyone with that kind of nerve. So she glared at him, and he glared back at her. Nobody exchanged any words. She was so furious at him breaking off part of her Kit Kat candy bar that she said, if he's going to be that brazen about it, I can be brazen too. And so she reached over, and she broke off a piece and ate it herself. Then he broke off another piece and ate it. And so they kept on. It almost became a contest between the two of them to see which one of the two could actually get the most of the candy bar. It didn't take long, and this one Kit Kat candy bar is consumed. And she sat there boiling mad. She's fuming because someone would be so rude and so presumptuous as to eat half of her candy bar. Well, after a few moments of silence, the man got up and left, and he comes back with another Kit Kat candy bar. He unwraps it. He broke off a piece. He started eating. She thinks, well, he ate half of my candy bar. I'm going to eat half of his candy bar. So she reaches over, and she broke off another piece, and she ate it. And so once more, we've got this same scenario repeated. He breaks off some, she breaks off some. They glare at each other, and the candy bar is gone. And she's sitting there. You could almost literally see smoke coming out of her ears. This is the most ridiculous thing I have ever had happen to me in my entire life. And they sat there, and she glared at him, and he glared back at her. Neither one of them ever said a word. And about that time, the announcement came over the intercom that her plane was ready for boarding, so she opened her purse to get her boarding pass. And to her utter embarrassment, there at the top of her purse was her Kit Kat candy bar. She had eaten half of two of this man's candy bars, and hers was still in her purse. Sometimes we have days like that, don't we? Has there ever been a time in your life that things really seem to be just totally going wrong? Days when the large man sitting next to you was eating your Kit Kat candy bar? Times when the whole world of yours was crumbling down around you? In those days, those moments, those times, we wonder what's going on. Well, that's the kind of feeling the apostles had when we come to John chapter 14. Those apostles, as John chapter 14 opens, those apostles have been on a roller coaster of emotions. Their week has started gloriously with Jesus and His triumphant entry into Jerusalem, riding on that colt as He comes in, and they spread the palm leaves and branches in front of Him. And they shout, Hosanna to the King. And even the chief priests had been plotting against Him. And they cried out in despair, what shall we do? The whole world has gone after Him. The chief priests, what can we do about Him? The whole world has gone out after Him. But they need not have been worried. Jesus had not come to establish an earthly kingdom. He had actually refused the crown. And they were disappointed. And they were stymied in their dreams of a Jewish kingdom. And they realized that they would not have Jesus as their miracle-working king. So this fickle crowd had begun to change. And it wasn't long until this priestly class was again seeking for someone who would betray Jesus into their hands. So as John chapter 14 begins, Jesus and the apostles are together in the upper room. They've eaten the Passover meal together. And just prior to the words of our text, where Jesus said, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." Just before that, He has dropped three big bombshells on these men. He told them He's going away, and they can't come with Him. He's told them that one of them is a traitor. And that's a lot to take in. And you can imagine how disheartened they were. He says, "I'm going away. I'm going to be crucified. You can't come with me. And one of you is a traitor." And yet, with all that Jesus is about to face, Jesus is concerned for others. Jesus knows of the coming ridicule they're going to face. Jesus knows the humiliation that's going to come their way. He also knows He's going to face a crown of thorns and a scourging. He's going to face the cross. And in the middle of all of that, Jesus is concerned for those men around Him. And Jesus says to them, "Let not your hearts be troubled." Jesus knows when we are sad. Jesus knows when we are confused. Jesus knows when we're mad. And He knows when we're depressed. And He knows when we're in despair. And yes, Jesus knows when we are troubled. Here in this passage, Jesus gives us the remedy. He gives us the cure for troubled hearts and troubled lives anywhere and everywhere that they exist. Whether the plight may be from sin or bludgeoning sorrow, Jesus comes to us with His adequate remedy. And that remedy is Jesus Himself. To the one who may suffer loss. To that man or that woman who's about to collapse under the weight of their load. Jesus comes. And Jesus comes with His inspiring, revealing, uplifting, all-sufficient power. When our hearts are troubled, what is the answer for a troubled heart? One answer, it's an answer that a lot of people turn to, is despair. No cure, no help. Undone, overborne, finished. That's the answer of despair. And that was the answer of Job, if you'll recall. Wave after wave after wave of trouble had risen over that old man. He had had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and all of his possessions were gone. He had had a great household of servants, and they were all taken away. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and they were all dead. He was covered in boils from the top of his head to the sole of his foot. His health was completely gone. His former friends had deserted him because instead of being sympathetic onlookers and sympathizers with Job, they had become cynical, carping critics of Job's. And his own wife said, "Job, it's not worth it. Job, give it up. Curse God and die." That, my friends, is the answer of despair. And the great tragedy is that there are some folks in our world who are prone to accept that answer to the trials and to the pain of life. Then there's another quite common cure that some people turn to, and that is stoicism. What is that? What is the doctrine of stoicism? That doctrine says that you are to seal your heart against all feeling. But put it away. Put all feeling away. Deaden your heart. Deaden your sensibilities. Deaden your emotions. Refuse to ever give vent to tears or emotion, and turn away completely from any feeling that you might have. The doctrine of stoicism is deplorable as the suggested remedy for a troubled heart. Then there's another proposal that some have for a broken and troubled heart, and that is denial. Denial boldly declares there's not any trouble. There's not any sin. There's not any suffering. There's not any pain. There's not any death. Doesn't exist. All of it's a bad thought. Forget about it. Well, the problem is that's a false philosophy. It's like the old proverbial ostrich putting its head in the sand, being afraid to face the facts of life. So instead of despair and stoicism and denial, we have Jesus coming. And Jesus tells us the cure. He says, "Let not your heart be troubled." Have you ever thought about our world today? This world that you and I inhabit, how tense, how nervous, how worried some people are in our day and time. Right now, at this very moment, in this place, you know in your heart, God did not intend for us to live that way. We are not made for that sort of struggle for existence. It's against every law of nature, and it's against every law of health, and it's against every law of God. The essence and core of Christianity is trust in God. As Jesus traveled up and down the dusty roads of Palestine, Jesus was constantly amazed that humanity did not really trust the Heavenly Father. We hear Him say things like, "Why are you afraid?" We hear Him say, "How little you trust God." We hear Him ask, "Why are you so fearful?" We hear Him question, "Why is it that you have no faith?" By every gentle word, by every act of compassion, Jesus was trying to show men and women that God is not only all-powerful, but God is also all-loving. And God is nearer to each of us than any of us know. And God is always ready, and God is always willing to make His power available to meet our needs. Think of that night in the upper room. Think of those that Jesus was talking to that night. They had been his closest companions for almost 3 years. Those men in that room had walked up and down the roads of Palestine with Jesus. They had been with Jesus. They had seen him raise the dead and heal the sick. They were there when he turned water to wine and fed the multitudes of people. And to those men, Jesus said, "Let not your hearts be troubled." And then he told them why. "You believe in God, believe also in me." Maybe, just maybe, that's our problem. We have never really become personally acquainted with Jesus. We know about Jesus. We know all the good things that Jesus did. We know that he was born in Bethlehem's manger. We know all the miracles that he performed. We know the blind eyes he opened, the deaf ears he unstopped, the lame feet and legs that he made to walk. We know all about him. But we don't really know Jesus Christ. Write this down. It's important. It's on your final exam. God did not design us for tension and worry. God designed us for happiness and joy. God created us for peace and for joy. And it is God's will for us that life should be free and lived to the utmost for His glory. What are your fears this morning? What are you most afraid of this morning? Ghoulies and ghosties and long-legged beasties and things that go bump in the night? Maybe. What is it that's your biggest fear today? Whatever your biggest fear is, whatever your biggest trouble is, take those troubles to Jesus. Give them to Jesus. Because Jesus tells us not to be troubled. We sing about it quite often. Are you weary? Are you heavy-hearted? Tell it to Jesus. But how often do we really do that? Jesus Christ is the only way out of trouble. Jesus is the only way out of perplexity, sorrow, and the black night of sin and selfishness. Jesus bore the weight and the guilt of our sins, mine and yours, in His own body on the cross. Jesus came to this world as the remedy for sin. "Thou shalt call His name Jesus, for He shall save His people from their sins." That was what an angel said to a young Jewish girl by the name of Mary so many, many years ago. Jesus is the victor. And Jesus is the conqueror over the unspeakable tragedy of sin. When you give your life to Jesus, when you truly make Jesus Christ the Lord and Master of all of your life, He'll bear your burdens. When Jesus is Lord and Master of all of your life, not just part of your life, but all of your life, then your heart will not be troubled. Is He? Is Jesus Lord and Master of all of your life this morning? Have you ever fully surrendered your stubborn human will to the will of Jesus Christ? Not just nominally, not just in word, but down deep inside, down in your heart of hearts. Have you ever fully, completely surrendered your will to the will of Jesus? If not, right now would be a good time to do it. To make a complete, unconditional surrender to the will of Jesus Christ. To live a life of obedience to all that He's commanded. We'd like to help you do that, and it's your opportunity to let us as we stand and while we sing.